Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 25, entitled The Glories of Devotional Service, Text 33.
Jarayatyasuyakosam Nigirnamannaloyata.
That's all.
Jarayatyasuyakosam Nigirnam manaloyata. Jarayati
dissolves. Ashu quickly.
Ya
which.
Kosam
the subtle body.
Nigirnam
things eaten.
Annala
fire.
Yata
as. Translation. Bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort, just as fire in the stomach digests all that we eat. Purport. Bhakti is in a far higher position than mukti because a person's endeavor to get liberation from the material engagement is automatically served in devotional service. The example is given here that the fire in the stomach can digest whatever we eat. If the digestive power is sufficient, then whatever we can eat will be digested by the fire in the stomach. Similarly, a devotee does not have to try separately to attain liberation. That very service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the process of his liberation, because to engage oneself in the service of the Lord is to liberate oneself from material entanglement. See, Bhava Mangala Thakur explained this position very nicely. He said, if I have unflinching devotion unto the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, then mukti or liberation serves me as my maidservant. Mukti, the maidservant, is always ready to do whatever I ask. For the devotee, liberation is no problem at all. Liberation takes place without separate endeavor. Bhakti, therefore, is better than mukti, or the impersonalist position. The impersonalist undergoes severe penances and austerities to attain mukti, but the bhakta simply by engaging himself in the bhakti process, especially in chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, immediately develops control over the tongue by engaging it in chanting and accepting the remnants of foodstuff offered to the personality of Godhead. As soon as the tongue is controlled, naturally all other senses are controlled automatically. Sense control is the perfection of the yoga principle, and one's liberation begins immediately as soon as he engages himself in the service of the Lord. It is confirmed by Kapila Dev that bhakti, or devotional service, is kariyasi, more glorious than siddhi, liberation. Because it says that bhakti, devotional service, dissolves the subtle body of the living entity without separate effort.
So, dissolve the subtle body, right? I mean, it sounds a little like eerie, right? What will be left after that subtle body gone? It just dissolves, right? The mind dissolves. The false ego just dissolves. Right? The subtle body just dissolves. So this is an interesting principle. It is a fact that actually these functions of thinking, feeling, and willing, the functions of the subtle body, are actually borrowed from the spirit soul. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is describing, just like a bird is borrowing the plumes and feathers of another bird. In that way, the material mind
is utilizing all the attributes of the spiritual mind. So, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta makes a distinction between the spiritual mind and the material mind. Of course, when we are considering the spiritual mind, we should understand that within the spiritual body, there is no difference between the person and the body. Therefore, there is no difference between the person and the mind. Or, to say it in a different way, the soul has the very functions of thinking, feeling, and willing itself. On the spiritual platform, thinking, feeling, and willing is no longer happening from the level of the mind, but is directly coming forth of the soul. At that stage, the subtle body actually dissolves, and the living entity has no further need for any subtle body. Then the time has arrived to have a spiritual body. So the process of devotional service is in itself enough to liberate us from the material energy. Haridas Thakur was explaining that simply the effect of Nama Bas is enough to liberate us from our previous sinful activities and enough to liberate us from the cycle of birth and death. In other words, it's not even necessary to perform pure devotional service. It is said that devotional service, even in the mixed state, right, is potent enough to fulfill the principle of Klesh Agni, to deliver us from suffering. So, even when devotional service is not purely performed, but if it's mixed, mixed means that we have some other motivation than just the desire to serve Krishna, but that we also have a desire for our own sense gratification, right? That means mixed devotional service. So even mixed devotional service can already liberate us. So even mixed devotional service is already dissolving, beginning to dissolve the subtle body. That is actually taking place. The subtle body, we may know, is staying with the living entity, life after life. When it is explained in Bhagavad Gita, Deinusmin yata dehe komaram yovanam jara tata dehantara prapti adirasata namuyati, that we are going from one body to another, life after life, then we should know that what is actually transmigrating is the spirit soul along with the subtle body. Therefore, the mind remains with us. It is the very same mind that was with us in all our previous lifetimes. It was the mind, the same mind was with us when we were plant, the same mind when we were demigod, the same mind when we were animal, the same mind when we were man, the same mind when we were woman. All these experiences are there within the mind. That very same mind when we were saintly, that very same mind when we were demoniac. So all these qualities are reflecting within the mind. Therefore, psychologists are right when they are speaking about the subconscious. It is a fact that all the impressions of previous lifetimes are subconsciously stored within the mind. So that is indeed a subconscious. That is correct. And Prabhupada explains that when there's intuition, when intuitively we know what to do, it is only because of previous experience. Instinct means previous experience. It's not that, well, I have a feeling that it's like, that this is the right thing to do. Yes, why is this feeling there? Because we've done it so many times before, so we know exactly what to do, and we connect with the subconscious. And in this way, we know. So actually, Prabhupada describes that it is simply previous experience, intuition. That's all it is. Yes, life after life, again and again, we are encountering similar situations. We've seen it before so many times.
right? And therefore, intuitively, we feel attracted, we feel repulsed, right? We got burned before, right? We know, right, certain places, no, I don't feel good about this place. The vibrations, we say. Something doesn't feel right. Yes, we already walked in that same trap many, many lifetimes, and now we think, well, maybe not again. In this way, the subtle body is more important than the gross body because it accompanies us much longer. Actually, it is explained that the senses are reflected within the mind, and it is within the mind that we can make the choice of sankalpa or vikalpa. The senses are simply registering different forms and different opportunities, but in the mind we have to make the choice whether something is anukul or pratikul, whether it is favorable or unfavorable. So this is essential. So the subtle body is of greater importance than the gross body, because especially once the subtle body is purified, then automatically the gross body will begin to act properly. It is the subtle body that controls the gross one. Therefore, we must make sure that we flood the subtle body with transcendental sound vibration. In Bhagavad Gita, there is the verse in the second chapter, Apuryamanam achala pratistam apasa mudra pravisanti yadvat, like the rivers that flow into the ocean, like incessant desires, it is said. Incessant desires are just flowing into the mind. So we have to make sure that along with these incessant material desires that are flowing within the mind, we have to make sure that there is a constant stream of transcendental sound vibration entering into the mind. Then that will counterbalance these material desires. Because then when the mind, when our consciousness tends to go into the material desires, then we can remember the transcendental sound vibration and the instructions of the Lord, and we can withdraw our attention from these material desires. And by withdrawing our attention from the material desires, gradually these material desires will dry up. When we are not giving attention to a particular desire, then after some time it goes away. But as long as we keep on giving attention to that desire, it remains very strong. It will feed it, right? And it will retain its full power. So this is the system of Krishna consciousness, that one must withdraw one's attention from dwelling on sense gratification and on the sense objects. Immediately one has to cut in the mind, not cut on the physical plane, and dwell in the mind again and again. This particular object of my affection in this world, it is so dear to me. How can I possibly leave this behind? I mean, it means everything to me. In that stage, spiritual life becomes impossible. Because in that stage, there is a great inner conflict which seems absolutely impossible to overcome. Anyhow, the philosophy of Krishna consciousness is one thing. The practice of Krishna consciousness is another. The senses are pushing very strong, and we are conditioned to identify with the senses. So even all the philosophy of the world cannot immediately break those habits to identify with the senses. Therefore, every devotee experiences a dichotomy, an inner contradiction within himself, that on the one hand he has more philosophical understanding than he can put into practice. Only the Mukta Purush, or the fully liberated soul, has conquered that dichotomy. He can actually say, Vyavasyatmika buddhi reikeha kuru nandana, that he has only one purpose, the pleasure of the Supreme Lord. So in his case, we can say that there is no longer any mixed tendencies in his devotional service. Then it becomes pure bhakti. In our case, this mixture of devotional service is there, and therefore we are experiencing a lot of pressure from the senses. Still, even although the pressure of the mind and senses is very strong, it doesn't matter. We just fill this, we just pour a lot of Krishna consciousness in. Just like if you have a surface of water and you are pouring in a nice quantity of water from the top with like force, then that will create waves that go in all directions and that push everything to the side. So if we pour in a waterfall of Krishna consciousness into our mind, then it will push all the other nasty thoughts that are constantly plaguing us, right? That are harassing us all the time, that are eating our mind, right? All these nasty thoughts, they will just be pushed to the horizon of our mind, right? So I think that the medieval concept of the flat earth, where if you are going too close to the horizon, that at once with a boat, that at one point you'll just fall off. I think that that image is the best to compare the mind situation. We just keep on pushing all the nasty thoughts to the horizon of the mind, and if we just push hard enough, then at one point they'll just fall off. Right? So then they all disappear. They just eventually they'll won't come back. This is how it works, Krishna consciousness. And one becomes free. So one becomes liberated step by step. In this way, the impure attachments in the mind that harass us so much at this point will dissolve. And then one becomes happy in Krishna consciousness. The only reason that we are not happy in Krishna consciousness is because we have attachment to all kinds of nasty things. That is it. What to do? So, therefore, we have to always keep very, very strong in hearing and chanting. That is our saving grace. We must develop a very, very strong pattern of that hearing and chanting every day. And when we do that without fail, then from that at least we'll get some strength to withdraw the mind when it begins to dwell on sense objects. But if that hearing and chanting is not strong, then when the mind goes into the sense objects, we will not be able to withdraw. It will not be possible. Devotional service is not only hearing and chanting. Devotional service must also be according to our nature and inclination. We have a particular interest, we have a particular ability, and it is natural that everyone ultimately likes to do what he's good at. It is explained that higher than the principle of Varna Ashram is to just surrender to the need of the moment and to do whatever is required for the Supreme Lord. Higher than to... But still, it is very natural to be engaged according to one's propensity in the service of the Lord. And the Lord also takes pleasure like that. If someone is naturally a good cook, Krishna will be... it is nice if such a person can cook for Krishna. If someone is a terrible cook, then it's... and he's just creating one horrible prep after another, then in due course of time we may, even Krishna may think, well, you know, this is not the most wonderful. Of course, it is said that Krishna accepts the devotion. And so even if the cook is not the greatest, but if it is done with great devotion, then that is acceptable to Krishna. Nonetheless, generally speaking, a person is engaged in those activities that come natural, that he knows how to do. And that's inspiring. Because, really, devotional service is based on the principle of pleasing Krishna and the Vaishnavas. So pleasing Krishna and the Vaishnavas is not some sort of abstract thing that, like, we're going to please Krishna and the Vaishnavas. No, it actually means that the Vaishnavas appreciate the service. And the most rewarding thing is to see that Krishna appreciates the service. Like in the spiritual world, it's not just that all the residents want to offer something to Krishna. No. They want to offer something to Krishna, and then they want to see that Krishna really appreciates it. They want to see that Krishna really loves that service. And if somebody cooks something for Krishna, then they want to see Krishna eat it, and you want to see the expression on Krishna's face of, wow, this is delicious, right? Or the same with the Vaishnavas. One wants to serve the Vaishnavas. One wants to see the ecstasy. One wants to see the happiness of the Vaishnavas. That's the happiness of a devotee. Right? That's when the happiness comes from the service, from the appreciation. So pleasing the Vaishnavas and pleasing Krishna involves not only from our side that we work so hard and make such a sacrifice to please, but ultimately, not always, constantly waiting for that appreciation. Many times there may be no sign of appreciation, and still we go on, we just serve and serve, no sign of appreciation. But then, in due course of time, every devotee needs that appreciation. Just like Krishna is also explaining that a devotee may say that liberation, I don't require liberation. Here Bilva Mangala Thakur is mentioned, and it was described how he said that liberation stands with folded hands at my door. But I have no time for that, you know, I'm too busy. I'm too busy serving Krishna. I'm not interested in liberation. I'm fine here in this material world. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also prays in the Sikshastikam, Janmani Janmani Swaray Bhavatat Bhakti Rahita Kitwayi. Birth after birth in this material world. But then it's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that still, even although the devotee may pray like that, Krishna takes that devotee back to Godhead. Because ultimately Krishna knows that in the heart of hearts, the devotee desires to be with Krishna. Right? And therefore, even if he's totally separated from Krishna in the material world and happy to do his service, still Krishna takes him back, brings him in his association, and then personally shows him the appreciation for all that service. Sooner or later, every devotee is hankering for that recognition from the Supreme Lord and the Vaishnavas for his service. It's not that this is to feed his pride, but this is to share. This is to be together. Right? That is personalism, right? And so it is very important that we develop this mood already here of mutual appreciation, of appreciating one's other service. Because without this mood of mutual appreciation, there will be so much bitterness. The material world is a world of bitterness. Yeah, many people have something bitter. You know, they feel misunderstood, mistreated, right? Not cared for, you know. Your mother didn't care for you properly, and now you have to go to a psychiatrist, and, you know, your teacher did not understand you, and then later, you know, it's the wife or the husband, and so on, and it goes on until eternity, life after life. Misunderstood,
Oh. But this, and in this movement, it is unfortunately also the case that there are many bitter people. People have bitter experiences who feel that they have not been dealt with fairly, felt they were not appreciated, right, properly. So this is a very serious thing, because this movement is the only shelter. This is the only opportunity. It is the only gateway to the spiritual world. So if we don't make this movement the most wonderful movement, right, then we'll make it so hard for people to take shelter. Still they have to take shelter. It's like my mood is, whatever they do, you know, like I'm not going. I'm not going away. They can, beat me, you know, kick me, throw me out, but I can't go anywhere. What can I do? I'll just throw me out. I'll sit on the stoop outside and just, you know, that I'm not going away, because where to go? There's no other shelter. Right. That is our final determination, not to leave. But does it really have to be like that? Can't it be more accommodating? So this is the most important principle in a movement which is meant to give shelter, to accommodate people. At the same time, we have to maintain the purity, the standards that are revealed to us by Krishna. Dharmam tu saksat bhagavat pranitam. Krishna reveals the process of devotional service, and we have to, that in the temple, we have to preserve the purity of the process. We cannot water it down. But still, we have to somehow or other develop this accommodating mood, because then this movement will become much more attractive. This is maybe one of the greatest failures of our movement, that we have not been able to give people sufficient appreciation. And therefore they were not inspired, and therefore nobody wants to cooperate, and therefore you have to do it all yourself, and therefore nobody's doing anything, and so forth and so forth. These kind of things you hear sometimes in temples by explained by leaders. And ultimately, if we look at the root cause of this, then we understand that it is the principle of appreciation. This appreciation must become at the center of bhakti, of devotional relationships, because this is the spirit of the spiritual world. We have a spiritual movement. It's totally transcendental, but it is covered by a little layer of yoga maya, just like the holy dham of Vrindavan is the spiritual world, but it is covered by a layer of yoga maya in the form of a little Indian village, with dirty streets where the garbage is not removed very well, and where hogs are walking around, and donkeys and old dirty dogs are just roaming around the streets, with lots of rickshawwalas driving past, and smoke and smog, and people calling you, why didn't you come in my shop? Yeah, and like that. So all these things are just covering the transcendental nature of the holy dham. In the same way, the entire movement is non-different from the spiritual world, but it has a covering on top of yoga maya, which makes it look like an organization in this world, which makes it have the same appearance as so many other organizations, and which make it follow the same laws and the same type of structure as as a worldly organization. And yet, this movement can never be successful, right, by the most professional level of organization. Not until first the spiritual principles are met. Therefore, first the principle of appreciation, and then it can filter from that spiritual platform into that top layer, and that can become transparent. Like all these years in Vrindavan, right? What was our service? I say, well, you did so many things. You were restaurant manager, guest house manager, sankirtan leader, treasurer, vice president, president, right? So many things, right? Yes, but all along there was only one service. And that service was, along with all the other devotees there, to somehow or other create an atmosphere in the Holy Dham where we would become transparent, where we would create, make the temple transparent to the spiritual world, right? So that the spiritual world would manifest, would surface, that it would be visible. That was our service, to make the spiritual world visible. So that's not only Vrindavan, that is our whole movement, right? In our whole movement, our business is to make the spiritual world somehow or other visible by becoming transparent. So becoming transparent means first spiritual principle. First, we fully dedicate ourselves on the spiritual platform. Then we can, within this world, create a wonderful spiritual movement. Srila Prabhupada, amongst managers, would be in the category of the most modern executives, totally up with the most up-to-date techniques of management, right? Which are all people-centered, right? Which are just based if you want to increase the performance of your manpower, you have to motivate the people by giving them, by investing in them. Right? Prabhupada did. He invested in his people. He was utmost personal. Right? And by being utmost personal with all the devotees, he was able then to set the goal of a mission, and everyone was ready to fly, right? So that is how this movement works, that we must be transparent to the spiritual world. Therefore, if we wonder how to organize our movement, we can, of course, study all kinds of books. We can study books on sociology, psychology, and we can look what management experts are coming up with. We can look how they are describing the need for social relationships in various books. But ultimately, our model is very simple. Just be transparent to the spiritual world. So let us look at the spiritual world. The world of appreciation. I was one time writing to my spiritual master about, in an appreciative manner, and he wrote a nice thing back. He wrote that, yes, as you're appreciating me, I'm appreciating you. We are the mutual appreciation society. So that's a nice, it sounds good, like you have this insurance, this mutual fund, you know. So we should indeed call our movement the mutual appreciation society. And if we somehow or other can come to that level, then everything becomes very nice. All problems will be resolved. You know, differences will be resolved. And That's the first principle. Therefore, we have to look for the quality. We have to look. Naturally, this requires humility, because it means not look for the fault, just look for the quality and glorify. And simply give the credit to others and not take any credit for himself. And the more one does this, the more Krishna will make such a person prominent. The more one is ready to simply give the credit to others, the more Krishna will give credit to that devotee. That is a spiritual principle. So we are studying the various lives of the great devotees who are all in the mood of the spiritual world and who are relating to each other in this way. And that is the purpose of this movement. So if we want some ISKCON reform, as some people do, then our meditation should be that. How to become transparent to the spiritual world. I'll stop with that. Any questions, any comments?
So your subtle body dissolves. What has happened to your subtle memory and symbolics?
So when the subtle body dissolves, what happens to the subtle memory that's stored within the unconsciousness? All these impressions that are within the unconsciousness are the impressions of karma. These are the reactions that the mentality that one develops. Like in Bhagavad Gita, it says, yam yam vapi smaram bhavam charati antakarevaram tam tam evaiti kuntiya sadatat bhava bhavitaha. That whatever you remember at the time of death, that will give you a particular mentality and that will carry you into the next body. So all these thoughts make up our mentality. See, if in this life, let's say we are dishonest, right? Sneaky, very sneaky. So a whole lifetime of like walking around with a very saintly face but being very sneaky in the back, right? Then that carries forward to the next. So then it will manifest again after some time. In the beginning it won't be so much, but it will come out again. Yes. So when this dissolves, gradually this disappears, this sneakiness. So what dissolves is all the bad qualities that we bring with us from so many lifetimes. Yeah. All the attachments to matter, they just dissolve, disappear. They're not there anymore. The attachment to the house. My house is a very, very, very nice house. Yeah. Disappears. Because there is no nice house in this world. Yeah. It's nothing is nice. This world is not nice. But it can be used for Krishna. Then it becomes nice. Then the use of it is nice. But in itself, material energy is never nice. So all that disappears.
So your personality, your personal identification?
With the material energy disappear, your personal identification is, I am the eternal servant of Krishna. That's it. There's nothing else. And it's called Ananya Bhakti, pure devotional service, nothing else but pure devotional service. I am the eternal servant of Krishna and nothing else. Kechit Kevalaya Bhaktya, only Bhakti, nothing else. It's wonderful, isn't it? That's liberation, isn't it? Yes, it is. Prabhupada doesn't make such a distinction between the two. It's actually Prabhupada who makes who says instinct and intuition. He said both. Of course, instinct may be, it's very close, because instinctively you feel what to do, right? You feel that where to go, where not to go. And intuition works very much in the same principle, that you kind of feel that, what is coming, what to do, right? Intuition, they feel what is right, what is not right. So it deals particularly with the element of already knowing the unknown, because actually it's not unknown at all. It's the same situation. That's the point.
But my understanding, it comes from a different source.
Please explain it to me.
I think instinct is connected with the subconscious and intuition is connected with what we call super soul.
Oh, I see. All right. Now, that intuition, you're talking about what comes from the super soul. Those are revelations coming from the Supreme Lord. That kind of revelation is pure and is okay. So, if you want to use the word intuition for that also, fine. But then intuition comes from two sources. It also comes from the subconscious of the mind, of our own mind and the store, and it comes, then the pure messages come through intuition, intuitively, through from the super soul. Yes, that you could say. But it's from both sources then. But just to see if she's satisfied. Huh? Yeah?
It was the other way around. Instinct was the super soul. Because animals have instinct.
Yeah. The thing is this, is that Prabhupada doesn't make a big distinction between the word instinct and the word intuition, first of all. So he interchanges the words. He doesn't see them as very different. And then sometimes Prabhupada may speak about instinctively or intuitively knowing something because it's revealed by the super soul. Fine. The point I was referring to was the subconscious, not so much the super soul. That element, okay, was just brought into the discussion because I made it, I was relating to what comes out of the subconscious, right, which is what is stored for many, many lifetimes. And if we, for example, know, when a dog knows this plant, I eat, it will make me throw up. You know, we know that dogs do that when they eat something wrong, right? According to Prabhupada, that kind of instinctive knowledge is not the super soul. That is previous experience, right? Yeah. Yeah. That's previous experience, okay? So it's not that the super soul is dictating everything like that. There's just the living entity has previous experience. There, okay. Well, okay, so it seems that there are statements on both sides, right? Basically, with your statement, then you're balancing my statement, basically. So there's statements on both sides. So sometimes super soul, sometimes previous experience. Let's settle it at that. Would that be okay? No, yes, I mean, that's fair enough. Because I'm responding to something I was reading, right? You know, I was reading something and like then puts you in a certain train of thought, and then you're responding to something else you were reading. Yeah. So, and now we bring it together and we get a balanced picture that sometimes, and you had already picked up on it, sometimes the intuition is, Prabhupada states it, as being related to the super soul and sometimes as just being previous experience.
And also memory is also super soul. Not as material, even also memory of previous experience is also super soul.
Well, there again, you know, like there are so many, I mean, there's the Chaturvyuha is also involved, right? In the functions of the mind. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
it's explained that that there are presiding deities of the mind and of the intelligence, etc. So in this way, Krishna in various expansions is involved in these matters. So it may be more complex if we ultimately look at the functioning of our minds and bodies. Then Krishna in various ways is controlling. But ultimately, the point is being made, right, by Prabhupada repeatedly, that there is a subconscious, that things are stored in the subconscious, and that we are remembering things from previous experience. And life after life, we are recognizing situations. That element which I brought out is definitely also there. Yes, I mean, whatever is in the subtle body, right, the quality, the subtle body, the mind, like I explained, that the material mind is borrowing the qualities of the spiritual mind. So thinking, feeling, and willing are original qualities of the soul. But when the soul enters into the body, then it says the soul temporarily goes into like an inactive or in a non-manifest state, right? So the full potency of the soul then becomes not manifest, but the functions of the soul begin to manifest through the mind. And thinking and feeling willing starts to happen through the mind. But as one comes to the spiritual platform, thinking, feeling, and willing will happen directly from the soul. But that's like very high level of Krishna consciousness. We don't have practical experience of that ourselves. With us, it's still through the mind. But with us, the mind gets gradually purified. Yes, Gurango.
So this is sometimes spoken as a healing power. Does it come from, is it his own ability to access this power, or is it given by some higher being?
Healing power is some form of mystic power. And we can see in the 11th canto, it is described how there are mystic powers coming forth of the three modes of material nature, and there is mystic power which comes directly from the Supreme Lord. So mystic power can come from different sources. So there's mystic power that comes forth of darkness, witchcraft and all that kind of things, or mystic power coming forth of the mode of passion, mode of goodness. Right? So healing powers can come from all those sources. But the most powerful mystic power is coming from the Supreme Lord.
Is the person then the medium of a higher being, or is it?
No, it can also be a lower being, can be a ghost, can be a rakshasa who gives healing power, and then later on takes advantage of it to take control of this person. Therefore, you can go to certain tantrics in India. You know, you have these fakirs, these Muslim fakirs, and they tie threads around you and they say certain things, and people say it works. But it ain't me that's going to those guys. No, no, no. Yeah, I'm not going to get their threads in my body, because you may open up certain gateways to subtle entities that may visit you after some time. Because all these powers are coming from the lower modes.
No, it's not his own ability.
It's connecting with other beings.
So why somebody has this ability? Is it from previous?
Yeah, can be from previous lives, or can be from performing certain processes in this lifetime. So either a person has already performed some processes in previous life. There are books that are describing what processes to perform. So there are tantric literatures, right, or books of witchcraft. And these tantric books of witchcraft are sometimes quite intense. You can collect the
nails and hair of a person, and you can mix it with certain ingredients, lizard's tail, and boil it well, and boil it down, and finally powder it all up, and you on the full moon, while speaking the following curse, you throw this powder at the person, and the person just goes insane. Tantra. Such scriptures exist. Mode of ignorance. Yeah, tantric knowledge is also like, ultimately all knowledge comes from the Supreme Lord. But it's perverted knowledge. Mode of ignorance, it becomes perverted, obviously. See, it's twisted. So people have been cooking up lizard's tails for a long time. Black cats and broomsticks. Yes.
But now you give the impression that all healing power is like something from lower people.
No. I mean, I told there were higher. I told there were the three modes of material nature plus the Supreme Lord. I just got a little bit into the example of the lower one, but I gave the example that there's four sources, three modes. So when it comes to the mode of goodness, then the healing power is very is coming from the devas. Generally, it says the healing power of the deva is by mantra. They're healing by mantra. Yeah, so that's there. And Ayurveda is definitely coming from the mode of goodness and not from from the lower modes. Yeah. Reiki, I don't know where it comes from, you know. I mean, in the ultimate, I haven't read anything in the Vedic literature directly about Reiki. Maybe Gauranga has read something because he reads the most. He's researching.
Vritasura, I think Indra.
Yeah.
He clobbered his elephant, and then afterwards Lord Indra, he heals the elephant.
Yeah. Was it Reiki?
Yeah. he
did he go like, did he do the symbol, you know, and the secret mantra? I never chant that. I also, when I was injured in the hospital, they gave me Reiki. And then I got Reiki 1, Reiki 2, and the whole thing. And in Reiki 2, you get like a symbol that you have to do in the mind, and you get a mantra, right? But I didn't like that mantra, because I was thinking, if I'm going to chant some sort of Japanese mantra, you know, I put my faith partially in this other mantra. I'm not going to do it. So if ever I do Reiki, I don't chant that mantra. You know which mantra I chant? Hare Krishna. And it works. Yeah. So my advice to all the Reiki Wallas and the Reiki too, if you have the symbol, if there's just instead of that funny Japanese mantra, just chant the Hare Krishna mantra, and you'll see your Reiki power is just flashing right from your hands. Sorry. Yeah. Fine. But it works, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. I tell you.
It works always. Without mantra, it's
well, but it is empowered. I mean, ho. It's supposed to get like at least four times more powerful by chanting that particular mantra with the symbol. Right? It's magnifying.
Well, this mantra gives you the ability to heal on distance.
That's making a bridge. That's the other one. There's two. There's like, you know, there's the bridge, and then there's the other one, like, you know. Well, if you use it only for material purposes, yes. But if we're using it for blessing people spiritually, then it's okay. I think. That depends on if the devotee is doing it, you know, then the devotee is healing this person so he can engage in devotional service. Then it's all spiritual.
So what do you think of love as healing power? That's my experience. Most of this kind of things.
Where do you find love? Where do you find it? Pure love is, yes, it's a healing power. But where do you find pure love?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. If you care about somebody, you know that it's...
Is it love, or is it because you want to use that person for your own comfort?
You mentioned that attention feeds desires.
Attention. Oh, yes, I'm with you now. Yes, I'm with you.
In my personal experience, I find that a lot of attention going to Hare Krishna, and then there are other desires which they don't get so much attention, but once you give them just a spark of attention, suddenly they start, you know, barging in like a mad elephant.
Mm.
So it's yeah. So how can we check that? You know, like
don't give him a spark. Don't give him a spark. Don't give him an inch. Don't do it. Don't give him any attention. And as soon as they start barging, withdraw all, you know, cut right there. Keep them down. You know, the beginning of Krishna consciousness is like that, because the mind is still very uncontrolled. Right? So these are the beginner's difficulties, and one has to have some patience. Yeah? And with time, it gets easier. One comes to the mode of goodness means one becomes more peaceful. And it is not so crucial anymore. And the battle, you know, of like battling the mind is not like, you know, Star Wars anymore, or like, you know, fighting the monsters. And it's not like a computer game.
I also want to ask if you could recite the verse, Manasavari in Korea, and translation.
Wow, so early in the morning. You want me to recite the verse and then? Pushings of the mind, senses, anger. These pushings are there. And one is to control them by cutting. That part you find in Bhagavad Gita. One is to cut the thought. Okay, this was a question, this was a real class about the mind. I got really mental. A very mental class, I must say. Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.